TalkZone.com.
Here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
The name's Adam Weber, and I see that you buy baseball cards.
How much you want for this Mickey Mantle rookie season?
I was hoping to sell all of the cards.
TalkZone presents the Fan Cave Radio Show with your host, Tom Morgan.
This guy's unbelievable.
Featuring Phil Rogers of the Chicago Tribune and Dave Hoekstra of the Chicago Sun-Times. Sponsored by HoosierBat.com.
Wait, I'll make you a deal. I will give you a Rogers Hornsby if you take me to the hotel.
The show that can change your life.
Rogers Hornsby?
Just let your wife find out you're listening to a sports and memorabilia show on the internet.
Rogers Hornsby's worth like $4,000.
So what? I got two of them, and this many Larry Yogi Berras.
Sit back, relax, and learn a thing or two. It's the Fan Cave Radio Show on TalkZone.com.
Let's go to work.
Welcome to the Fan Cave Radio Show. I'm Tom Morgan with Phil Rogers of the Chicago Tribune, Dave Hoekstra of the Sun-Times, and producer Dave Olson. We're on every Wednesday morning live from 8 to 9 a.m. Central Time. And then you can hear rebroadcast 24/7 anytime at TalkZone.com. Well, guys, the Bulls Heat series isn't over, but the final credits are rolling, I think, after last night's game. That tough loss for the Bulls. They had the final shot in regulation and didn't come through, and they were running on E in overtime, and the Heat just dominated them.
Yeah, you're right, Tom. For the first time all year, I woke up this morning thinking, who doesn't come back for next year? Do they keep this team together? And it's like the first time all year I've looked beyond to the end of the playoffs. I mean, it's not impossible that they come back and win the next three, but the odds are really, really stacked tall. About as tall as the Willis Tower, I think.
Yeah,
I was just reading. I think it's been 30 years since the team came back 3-1. I think Boston beat Philadelphia in 81 when they were down 3-1.
Yeah, the tough part is really, if the Heat keeps playing D like they are and the Bulls don't come up with some way to counter their defense on Rose, it's not going to happen. They might win the game at home. You know, I'd like to see them win game five, but do you see them going, winning at home, winning in Miami, coming back, winning again if the Heat big three are all healthy? I don't see it. You know what was actually, when you look back at it, in overtime, the Bulls were out of gas and got trounced. But during the game, if Miller was hitting a couple shots for the Heat and Korver wasn't, what a big turnaround that is. I mean, if Korver hits two threes and Miller doesn't make his, the Bulls win by six or seven probably. I mean, that's just a huge part. It doesn't look that big, but it is. Look at when Miller made his threes. They were backbreakers. That was so irritating, and Korver can just not hit a three right now.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it really anybody on the Bulls. I mean, Dang made one or two, but you know, they had
Dang had a good game. Dang had a really good game last night, actually, I thought.
That stretch you're talking about, Tom, I think late third, early fourth, when they had a chance to turn like a 7 or an 8 point lead in the double digits, and they just couldn't get it. It seemed like they had some bad trips down where they took quick, easy shots and, were just missing them.
Yeah, that was key in there. They could have really controlled the game at that point.
Bosch is having such a nice series, too. He really is.
He really has come through big time for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really has. It's been, he's been impressive. He's been more impressive than I thought he'd be.
Me too,
That defense though, man alive, they are really playing I thought, you know, you always knew that Wade and LeBron were good for those, the steals and the blocks, but the on-ball defense of LeBron has really been impressive. He's made a couple of his typical knucklehead plays, but overall, this series, he's been great. And, I mean, he looked like the league MVP in that matchup last night over Rose. I mean, LeBron had a great game last night.
Yeah, you put him head up on Rose like he was a lot of last night, and it looks like the size difference just smothers Rose. That you know, he's maybe tentative, thinking he's not gonna get a shot off from the outside, and they packed that lane so well. They've you know, he had two or three really good drives in the first half last night, but by and large, it looks like he doesn't really look at that as an option to go inside anymore.
He, you know what he's not doing? He's either trying to force it all the way in and take it to the hoop, and Miami is shutting that down. And, or he's taking a three, but he's not doing a drive and then, boom, stopping for a quick pull-up mid-range jumper. He's not taking any of those. And when a guy's as fast as Rose is, if he can always beat the first defender, but if he stops and takes the pull up, the first defender's on his heels, and it's before the help defense can really come. It seemed to me that he's got to do that some more. But you know, he's not used to he hasn't had to do that all year. It's just, but they better make the changes quickly, or it's just not going to happen. So we'll see what happens with the Bulls, but it doesn't look good. You know, Phil, one thing I wanted to ask you about with that Marlon Byrd injury. Let's say that his vision is messed up, and it sounds like he's going to be able to come back. But let's say his vision is messed up. You've got Reed Johnson for a while. How is Brett Jackson? I know Brett Jackson has some good stats in the minors. At what point do you think, if Byrd can't play especially, do the Cubs decide to bring up Brett Jackson?
Well, right now Jackson's got an injury. He has like
That's what I thought.
Yeah, he's got something with his left hand, I think, a strained ligament and a finger, and I think it's his left hand. And, you know, I think when he's healthy, they'll take a look at him. I'm a little frustrated now. They're in this catch-22, and it has a lot to do with Jim Henry and Mike Quatty wanting to have as many wins as possible. But I think if you take some emotional distance away from that team, you see that at best they're the fourth best team in that division. The division's now lined up the way it should, with St. Louis, Cincinnati, and Milwaukee in the top half. Those teams are a lot better than the other three. And, you know, the reason I go to that is, you know, Reed Johnson has earned his playing time. He's a great pro player. But I don't want to see him in center field because he's a short-term guy that's, you know, he's the kind of a guy they could trade at the trade deadline when they're out of it. Yeah. And I would like to see them use this to get at bats for the other guys. Campana, Tyler Colvin right at the start at Iowa, you know, I think through four games he had hit the ball really well. I'd like to see him come back and get some at bats. And when he's healthy, I'd like to see Jackson get some at bats. And just, you know, I think they need to, you know, favor the young guys over the blue collar veterans like Reed Johnson. But I could understand why they would think, you know, Johnson's earned his playing time. He's been great this year, but it's just, where is it going to take you?
Wouldn't you think they're probably waiting until maybe mid, late July? And if they're out of it at that point, then all the young guys are in, I would think. Wouldn't you think, Dave, from you watch the Cubs a lot?
I was out there last night. I'm on the Lou Montanez bandwagon. He had a great night last night. I know he's an old guy for a new player, but that's what we keep saying. I mean, I've said that for a long, long time. I'd rather see them work with the young kids.
It's basically, this is a rebuilding year for them, but they have still so many veteran contracts that are being paid so much money. It's almost, you're almost forced to play them at least till you know, it just, six games out isn't out of it, technically, even though it six games for behind the three teams they're behind, and with the team the Cubs have, might as well be 16 games. But six games, you know, they're still in it, so they're still going to play their veterans, I would think. But sooner than later, they need to get these young guys in there because that's where they're going. They're rebuilding.
Hey Tom, Dave mentioned a name. So before we get away from it, let me ask you guys a quick question. This Lou Montanez, who I think Dave referred to as an old Baltimore guy, where was he drafted and by whom?
Well, I know that, yeah. Talked about the Cubs.
You know,
wasn't he a first round shortstop for the Cubs?
Yes, he was, and third pick overall, third pick in the country.
I remember reading about him. I was telling people the game last night. He was a big Cubs guy. I remember reading a story where he had a mock up of Wrigley Field in his backyard. I think he's from Florida, and he was like he really wanted to play for the Cubs. And yeah, he was an infielder.
it was kind of one of those drafts that you wondered if they signed him for signability as opposed to taking the best overall player. And I remember talking to Jim Hendry at the time. It was the 2000 draft, and Jim was the scouting director. He was very defensive that, it just really wasn't a very good draft. There weren't super talents in it. And I'm looking at that right now. It was the same draft. Adrian Gonzalez was the first guy in the country. But you get past Montanez, the other guys in the top 10 were Rocco Baldelli is probably the only guy in the top 10, other than Adrian Gonzalez that spent significant big league time. And the one guy they missed on in there, Chase Utley, UCLA second baseman Chase Utley was the 15th pick overall. How would things have changed if they had drafted Chase Utley instead of Luis Montanez?
Adrian Gonzalez has sure settled in for the Red Sox. But you see, he's got over 40 RBIs, and he's hitting about, I don't know, what's he hitting, about 330 or something. He was off to a slow start.
And think about the numbers he's putting up. Across the board, that's a lineup that really has nobody else doing much. Pedroia, they benched Pedroia last night to just give him a night off to get his head together. He hasn't been his normal self, and Euculus hasn't been his normal self. Carl Crawford's been, still hitting 205.
Yeah, he's been horrible.
You wonder how big those Gonzalez numbers would be, if he had the normal production around him.
Carl Crawford always, to me, was a very good player, but boy, the money they gave him, which brings the quote by the Mets owner about Jose Reyes. Did you see that one where he was talking about Reyes and Beltran and David Wright?
Yeah, that was awesome. That was like what happens if you give owners truth serum and a microphone. I couldn't really disagree with anything he said. I thought he sort of nailed his own guys. I mean, you don't see owners speaking that candidly. But I don't think his conclusions were out of line at all.
They played to his expectations last night. The Mets were just awful. The Cubs finally found a team worse than them. I mean,
it's usually not a good idea to rip your own guys if you're thinking of maybe trying to trade them the next month or two, though,
Yeah, I was in Cincinnati, and I was listening to the radio driving home, and they said that the Reds are seriously looking at Reyes. They said that trade come down in the next few weeks. Have you heard anything on that, Phil?
No, the one team you hear with him is San Francisco. I think there's no question he's going to wind up being traded. The Giants have Tejada that they've been got off to a really bad start, but he started to pick it up a little bit lately. The Reds, he would be a good fit with the Reds, such an athletic team. He could definitely fit there. They signed Renteria to go along with their guy Paul Janish. But shortstop has been sort of a revolving door for him, so he could be a fit for him.
When I was looking up Brett Jackson's stats, and then I checked Vicieto to see how he's doing. To me, he's going to have to get called up pretty soon if the White Sox offense is picking up, but if it doesn't get better. But then I started looking up some rookies this year that are in Major League Baseball. Remember how great a year last year was for rookies? There aren't many good rookie hitters this year. Darwin Barney's having a good year, and Hosmer for the Royals got called up. Looks like he's going to be an excellent hitter, but there's some tough starting pitchers in the American League. Zach Britton is 5-2 with a 2.14 ERA, and Jeremy Hellickson, who's a big time prospect. I mean, it's no surprise he's 5-3 with a 3.14 ERA for Tampa Bay. But then that Michael Pineda for Seattle, 6-2 with a 2.16 ERA. That's some tough rookie starters coming up.
Yeah, and the guy that was maybe billed as highly as those guys, Kyle Drabek, who was sort of the key to the Roy Halladay trade to Philadelphia, he's pitched well for the Blue Jays, you know, too. So
yeah, solid, yeah.
Last year there were a lot of really good arms that came into baseball, and I think that's happening this year too. And I think it does have something to do with the hitting numbers being down. I mean, people look at amphetamines and other rule changes, reasons trying to explain it. But I think we're just in a cycle with a lot of good arms.
Have you seen Greg Infante pitch for he's the White Sox minor league relief pitcher?
I have. He throws really hard. He's a power right-hander. Nothing really fancy about him. He came up and pitched pretty well last year. I think he only had maybe four or five appearances for the White Sox.
Yeah.
But, you know, he wasn't freaked out. I was surprised a little bit they started him off in Double-A this year. I think they just brought him up to Triple-A. He's an impressive guy, and so is they have a guy named Anthony Carter, another power right-handed reliever who's I don't think he's pitched as well this year anywhere close to it. He was a closer in Double-A last year, but I like him a lot. He was with the Team USA team in that I think the tournament was in Puerto Rico last year, and you know he's an impressive guy.
Well, we'll get more to the White Sox when we get to Hoekstra Chicago. Dave, you're going to be talking about your Cleveland trip, correct?
I did an Ohio baseball trip. But you blew over Barney. He's going to be, if he keeps this up, he'll be Rookie of the Year, I think, in the National
League. He'd have to be. There's really nobody even close to him right now.
You know what he could also be if he keeps it up is an all-star second baseman.
Yeah.
It seems like it's a down year for National League second baseman. He's right at the top in RBIs and runs scored among National League second basemen. You know, you wouldn't think of a Cub guy piling up the totals, but the standard's pretty low at second base this year in the National League.
Well, it's time for a short break now. We'll have a break. We'll come back for Bucks in the Belfry. I've got an extended Bucks in the Belfry segment this week. And then we'll get to Hoekstra Chicago, and after that we'll do our Cleveland Indians White Sox discussion. So we've got a lot to come, folks. Hang in there. We'll be right back.
The solid sound of wood hitting a leather ball. That's the way baseball started, and that's how Hoosier Bat Company believes the game should be played. They've been providing bats to minor and major leaguers for 20 years. They offer ash bats, birch bats, and their patented Wood Force 2000, a bat with hickory in the sweet spot for great hits. View their products online at HoosierBat.com and see why players at every level have come to appreciate their quality and customer service. You can also visit them at 4511 Evans Avenue in Valparaiso, Indiana, or call 1-800-228-3787.
Rosati's of Naperville and Carroll Stream is the place for great pizza and more. They use only the finest ingredients. That's why Rosati's mouth-watering menu can't be beat. Rosati's delivers for lunch daily. In Naperville, call 630-305-3500. In Carroll Stream, 630-653-9009. That's Rosati's of Naperville and Carroll Stream.
You found the best place for quality internet talk around the clock and around the world. TalkZone.com.
It's time for Bucks in the Belfry. Each week I have a segment where I talk about some of the items that I've seen in the marketplace that are for sale. Some exciting high-priced items, some items that people bring in to Tea Crown, the Triple Crown in Naperville, the store that I own, TCrownTom.com. They bring them in and they ask me, they think they have something valuable. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And I got, there's some really interesting items this week. You guys probably know that Bryce Harper is considered by some, if not the best hitting prospect, one of the best hitting prospects to come into the baseball, into Major League Baseball or into the minors right now in years. And I have on my eBay T Crown Tom seller idea Bryce Harper 2011 Bowman Orange Border autographed card numbered to 25. Bryce Harper, you could compare how hot his items are this year to how hot Steven Strasburg items were last year at this time. This Harper card right now is at $1,325. Okay, I listed it Sunday, you know, just this past Sunday, running it for a week on eBay. There are already 101 people have it on their watch list, which typically, for if I run an item, a popular item on eBay, if maybe 30 guys have it on a watch list, it's doing real well. It's a very popular item. 101 guys have it on their watch list right now. It's at $1,325 and has a very good shot to break $3,000. Now, here's a guy, great hitting prospect, no doubt about it, but he hasn't played a game in the major leagues. And as we can see with Strasburg last year, there always is that injury possibility. Phil, have you seen Bryce Harper hit at all?
I have not, only on video and television. I haven't seen him myself. Everything you hear is really, really positive. The one bit of news, and I was wondering how this might affect the card market for him, is that, you know, they said this week they ended any speculation that he might get to the big leagues this year, and they just said they're not going to push him that fast no matter what he does in the minors.
I like that. I like that because the one thing you do hear about him is he's kind of immature and a bit of a jerk. I've heard from more than one report. There was a report in Sports Illustrated about a month ago which really wasn't good about his prospects. So I'd like to see him, leave him down there, let him grow up, let him see what it's like in the minors, and then not bring him up till he's mentally ready for it, even if he can hit, because they're not winning any titles, but you know that. But that's the Bryce Harper 2011 Bowman autographed card numbered to 25. It's at $1,325. The auction ends Sunday morning. Another item I have currently on eBay, I've talked about this a little bit in the past, Ernie Davis. There was a movie about Ernie Davis. He was a running back for Syracuse in the early 60s. Was supposed to be the next great running back in the NFL, and I believe he had leukemia, died at a very young age, so there's not a lot of Ernie Davis autographs out there. Wow. I have one of one cut signature card of him where he had signed it Ernest Davis from National Treasures. It has a starting bid of $4,500 on this card. An interesting fact about this, when the card was pulled at Triple Crown, I took a picture of it and I posted it on Twitter, and Panini, the card company that put out the product, actually wrote a blog about it, and it turns out the cut signature that is on this card, it's Ernest Davis, and this came directly from an exam that he signed while at Syracuse, and apparently is the only Ernest Davis signature out there in the cut signature market. There's only been 5 total cut signature cards of him produced, so it's a valuable card. And another nice one that's in, and I have on eBay, this is one of the nicer looking double autographed cards. This is from Exquisite Collection. It's a Michael Jordan, Julius Erving double autograph, numbered to 10. They both signed it on the card. Just a beautiful autographed card with an $899 starting bid on my T-Crown eBay seller ID. Now, you can get to my eBay items if you go to tcrowntom.com. That's my website, and there's links there to all my eBay items. Now, also this week, this past week, a lady brought in some 1887 old judge cards. I don't think I've ever had any of these brought into Triple Crown before. And I took a picture. She had them in an album, which is never good. They had been pasted in an album. One of her relatives had passed away. She found the album. And in addition, there were these, the 1887 cards mixed in with these like flowery postcards in there, which I told her I know nothing about the other things in this album. For all I know, some of those postcards might be valuable.
I told my mom to stay out of your store, Tom.
So anyway, the old judge cards could be very valuable, but the problem with these is they were pasted in the album, which definitely hurts condition, because whenever you get them out of an album, they're going to have the rips and tears on the back of the card. Plus, some of them were actually cut, like with a scissors. So the ones that are cut, you probably wouldn't even be able to get a grade on those cards. You'd be able to get an authentic grade. That would be about it. But there's an interesting Chicago card in that set that I don't think she has. I told her, go look. There's a Cap Anson card in that 1887 set that in the lowest condition in a one books at $7,000. And I think an eight, if there even are any eights, is like a $100,000 card. So if there was ever a mint condition Cap Anson card for that set, that might rival some of the Honus Wagner cards as far as the value of what it might actually sell for. So that was really interesting seeing those cards. You don't like to tell. And she was disappointed at what her cards, that little group of them, probably only worth about $1,000 to $1,500. But still, just the, you know, so neat, the history. When you're thinking 130 years ago or whatever, 125 years ago, they're making baseball cards of these guys. And one, another item that came in, this was actually emailed to me from a listener, sent me along a DiMaggio mantle, dual signed and framed item. Now, they didn't have it authenticated, so I don't sell items. It's almost from a security or insurance type standpoint. They have to have secondary authentication in order for me to be able to sell an item. The autographs on the piece look authentic, but there's a lot of forgeries out there. So just for safety, you don't want to be selling phony autographs. But if these are authentic, this item would probably be in the $795 range. So some neat items coming through T-Crown. And if you do have an item you want me to talk about on the show, or even if you want to talk to me about maybe selling something for you on consignment or even selling it outright to me, check out my website, tcrowntom.com, or just check me out at Triple Crown in Naperville. My name is Tom Morgan. So, Phil, were you going to add something about Bryce Harper when we were talking about Bryce?
Well, I was just going to point out, I mean, most people know his background, but talking about immature, this is a kid that should be graduating from high school this week.
Right.
His family moved him up to get him in the 2010 draft instead of this year's draft. He played junior college baseball when he really should have been a junior in high school. I mean, it's ridiculous how advanced this guy is. And I don't think it's that bad. I mean, I know I have this argument with my son who just finds it obnoxious that he moved up the line that quick. But when you hear the stories and talk to people who saw him in high school, you know, it was like having a high school kid go play Little League baseball. I mean, what's the point to go out there and just crush, like batting practice pitching every day?
That's true when you think about it. Well, you know, we're going to have a a long segment, I think, here coming up with Dave Hoekstra after the Hoekstra Chicago. So why don't we go right now to our next break, and we'll come back with Hoekstra Chicago and then our Cleveland White Sox debate. So hang in there, folks. We'll be right back.
The solid sound of wood hitting a leather ball. That's the way baseball started, and that's how Hoosier Bat Company believes the game should be played. They've been providing bats to minor and major leaguers for 20 years. They offer ash bats, birch bats, and their patented Wood Force 2000, a bat with hickory in the sweet spot for great hits. View their products online at HoosierBat.com and see why players at every level have come to appreciate their quality and customer service. You can also visit them at 4511 Evans Avenue in Valparaiso, Indiana, or call 1-800-228-3787. Southside Cards and Collectibles is your one-stop shop for premier cards and collectibles. No matter what your hobby, baseball, football, basketball, hockey, NASCAR, gaming, or more, Southside Cards carries all the new packs and boxes from Upper Deck, Topps, Panini, and Press Pass. You'll also find memorabilia and supplies. Come in today and see for yourself. Southside Cards is open every day but Monday. They're located at 11325 West 143rd Street, Orland Park, Illinois. Call 708-873-5088 or visit them online at southsidecards.com. Southside Cards and Collectibles, your one-stop shop for premier cards and collectibles. Call 708-873-5088 or online at southsidecards.com.
You've discovered TalkZone.com.
TalkZone.com,
the best in internet talk radio.
Weekly segment, Hoekstra Chicago. Bring it on, Dave.
It's always kind of a lean weekend on Memorial Day weekend. A lot of bands and a lot of quality acts, you know, aren't really touring that much. I perused the schedule, but up in Evanston, there's a great little place called Space. It's run by a couple of musicians, a conglomerate of musicians, one being Dave Spector, a great blues guitarist. So it's just a great, no pun intended, a great space to hear music, and the acoustics are really fine. It's in downtown Evanston. And on Friday night, the Rebirth Brass Band, they've been around since 1982. They're from New Orleans. They're featured in that HBO series Dream. They're going to be up there, and that's a good show. You know, you can mix up a little bit of New Orleans food, find a good Cajun restaurant in Chicago, Evanston, and then check that show out. I'd recommend that. Also a good weekend to get on the road, and as you were saying, maybe head over to Cleveland for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and check out some stuff there. I did my road trip. I did a baseball road trip from Cleveland down to Columbus, down to Dayton. And Phil, I took Hal McCoy to the Dayton Dragons minor league game on Monday night, so he says hi to you. It was
awesome.
He said it was the first time he sit in the stands for a game in 30 years, you know.
Wow.
And it was really, really poignant. You know Hal's backstory. He's legally blind, so I guess he still covers like home games from television, and they have a 7-second delay and stuff. And then they had weather a little bit worse than today or what they had last night in Texas. And a big storm comes through there. The power went out in the stadium, and they evacuated everybody. And they told us all to go into the bathrooms.
Really?
And same with Hal. We didn't know what to do, so we gave Hal a ride home. But we had a remarkable time. We watched about three innings together, and we just talked baseball. He got there a little early. Really, first time I'd met him in person, and so it was another highlight of that trip. But yeah, I'm doing a story on Ohio baseball. So
was there a tornado while you were there?
It was close to a tornado. That stuff was really, it was, yeah, they were really, really concerned. I don't know really what the purpose of sending everybody in the bathroom as it was, just to get out of the concourse or something. I'd say they had about, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 people there. It's real interesting. In Dayton, they're closing in on this big streak of, like, Monday night was a 799 straight sellout, and on July 9th, they're going to break the all-time professional sports record of consecutive sellouts. They're making a big deal out of that, which I guess is held by the Portland Trail Blazers.
How big is the park?
About 7,000 and change. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, and it's quite a big deal down there. But what a nice gentleman Hal was. You know, and there were so many little nuggets he threw out when we were talking. But you know, he told me, he said that, and he goes back. His first manager was 1962 with Dave Bristol with the Reds. But he said the best manager hands down that he's covered with Cincinnati is Dusty Baker. You know, and that includes Lou, and that includes Sparky and stuff. He said Dusty's just no nonsense. He tells you the truth. He doesn't mess around with you. Doesn't try to lie to you. He's always accessible. He said he's the best manager he's covered in Cincinnati. I found that kind of unique. You know,
yeah, that's a surprise.
It covers a lot of territory. I think he had Vern Rapp for a while too. Don't forget that.
He said Dave Bristol was a real prick. He was just a real, real jerk and stuff. And that was
Dave, give a little background on who this is so the listeners know who you're talking about.
That's a good point. Hal McCloy's a long time. He's covered more than 7,000 games. He's a beat writer. Covered a lot of the Reds games. He's in the Hall of Fame, Baseball Hall of Fame. 70 years old. And when was it? About maybe 2003, Phil? I think he was, you know, legally blind. He lost his eyesight. He can still see in the distance. He was able to pick up stuff going on in the outfield. But he was interesting. He would talk about how he watched the way the batter's heads would move, and that would dictate where he knew where the ball was going. But he's been covering baseball in the Dayton, Cincinnati area for 37 years. Yeah, quite a legend. And when the storm's coming down, I mean, he's a celebrity there. Everybody, like, they were concerned about him, and they were going, hey, Hal, how are you doing? Hey, Hal, do you need a ride? And very much revered down in the Dayton, Cincinnati area.
Yeah, he is a great guy, a great reporter. You know, he's always interesting working for the Dayton paper rather than one of the, you know, Cincinnati has been a good newspaper town through the years, yet he's pretty much owned that Reds beat. You know, most of the time he's covered, and you know, I wonder how many times the Cincinnati papers came at him with offers, and he was loyal to his paper in Dayton.
Yeah, yeah, he said. I asked him if he thought his style or his approach would have resonated in other cities. You know, San Francisco, Chicago, New York. He said he's had offers in a lot of the big cities. He just wanted to stay in Dayton. You know, grew up a Cleveland Indians fan. He's from Akron. And he grew up a huge Indians fan and ended up covering the Reds all these years. You know, it was really interesting from a journalistic standpoint, too. He was really on the Pete Rose story. And they had him, you know, during all the stuff with Giamatti and stuff, they had him, from a journalistic standpoint, they had him covering all that, the legal aspects and the news aspect of that story, while he was also covering the team. And he just talked about how challenging that was to, you know.
Well, And put on top of it that he had a long time personal relationship with Rose.
Right.
I mean, that would be as extended as a guy could get, I think.
Yeah, and they had he said they had a falling out, of course, and but now they're friends again. They keep in touch and stuff.
So then you went to see a game at Cleveland. It sounds like you were impressed.
I went, I started Cleveland, did Columbus, and I went down the chain. And that's the interesting thing about Ohio baseball. All those teams are all affiliated with each other. So, I mean, for instance, Columbus is a Cleveland affiliate. Dayton is a Cincinnati affiliate. They were out of town, but I know there's a team in Akron that's a Cleveland affiliate. So all these, you know, as far as cost of moving guys around and bringing guys up, it's very minimal and stuff. But, yeah, I went to the Saturday game in Cleveland, the 2-1 game. Homer Bailey pitched for Cincinnati and stuff. It was their first non-opening day sellout, like in 2007 or 2008. And yeah, it was number one. Having gone to so many Cubs games this year, I was impressed with the crisp, way they played the game. It was quick, sharp, snappy, just a wonderful, just a classic game. And the crowd was just really into it. There's just a I talked to just as a fan, not as a journalist, and, you know, I hung out after the game and stuff, and the town's beaten down. I mean, you know, there's the whole economy issues, and they're still really, you know, really, really down about the LeBron thing. It's a feel-good story. You know, it's just a real feel-good story, and the place was electric. It was really a nice experience.
That's actually good, because when the season started, it looked like they were going to have trouble averaging 10,000 people there, and you remember the years they had that string of years they were filled every game. It's good that there's some excitement back there.
And Howard and I talked a lot about that, and I think that Red series really, well, they swept the Reds, and I think that kind of, you know, Hal said during spring training they'd be going to these games. They thought Cleveland was a 100-loss team and stuff, and now there's a lot of people starting to think this may be for real. You know, they built up a big enough. I know they lost. I think they lost last night, but you know, they built up 8 or 9 game lead. You know.
Well, there might not be anybody to come catch them. I mean, people keep thinking. I thought Detroit was going to be the team, and then they have a losing streak and fall back. You know, the White Sox are playing better, making up ground. But man, you dig a hole like they dug, you leave yourself no wiggle room.
Looking at the Indians, that to me they have a good young lineup, but to me who's going to be their fourth and fifth starters? They have a couple good young pitchers at the top of their rotation that should be legit and should be able to hang on, but you know, they have Justin Masterson, who looks real good. That Josh Tomlin,
he pitched on Saturday. He was great.
He's 6-1 with a 2.41 ERA and a .82 WHIP. I mean, a 1.2 WHIP is solid. He's got a .82 WHIP, so he must have been impressive. But after that, who pitches for them? And once they start playing the better teams, you know, up till now they're 16-3. Against teams like the Royals and Seattle and A's and Orioles. They've been beaten up on some bad teams. They're 1-4 versus the Sox. They still have a lot of games against the Sox, the Tigers, the Twins. I think they're going to have trouble from here on out being over .500 the rest of these games, which would still finish them mid to high 80s and might be enough to win the division, but by no means are they a lock, not even close.
It's interesting. I'm just a fan. I'm not a writer, but I mean, it's just interesting to watch these teams as they begin to believe in themselves. And I was thinking about that at the game last night. I mean, the Padres last year, of course, Tampa Bay. These are teams that nobody. That's what's fun, to watch these teams come out of nowhere. And I just really think that the whole Indian thing in their mind, they're really gaining traction. I think they're really. I'm a little. Chris Perez, I don't think, is that strong a closer. He's like the big folk hero out there and stuff. They all get excited when he comes in.
He's 13 out of 14 right now on saves. Will he be able to keep that up?
Yeah, right.
You know, who knows? You never know with closers. You never know with any closer. It seems like that's one position. If it's not Mariano Rivera, from year to year, just about any closer, you don't know. They might have 48 saves one year and get rocked the next year. It's a hard spot to predict.
A guy who's been really impressive for them, and he had a lot to do with them winning in 2007 when they really should have gone to the World Series, is Asdrubal Cabrera, the shortstop. He was the second baseman in 07, but
he's having a great year.
He's, you know, he looked great when he got to the big leagues 4 or 5 years ago, and then he kind of faded. He had some injury issues. He's had trouble playing more than 110, 120 games a year. But he's already has more RBIs this year than he did all of last year, which was in like 100-plus games. He had a two-homer game over the weekend, I think, against the Reds, and then against the Red Sox on Monday night. Homered earlier in the game, and then in a driving rain in the ninth inning, he got the double that gave him another comeback win, which is kind of been a trademark for him, or walk-off wins and comeback wins.
From a White Sox standpoint, you obviously have to watch what they're doing now the rest of the year, but to me, I'm still more looking at the Tigers than the Indians overall. I'd be amazed if the Indians end up with a better record than the Tigers and probably than the White Sox, actually.
Really?
Yeah,
How long will you be saying that? Will you still be saying that, like, around Labor Day?
Well, probably if they've already fallen off, yeah, probably. I mean, you know, when you look at who they've beaten up on, you know, they've had a pretty easy schedule to start things off. And you know, hitting always picks up in the warm weather, and they don't have a deep pitching staff. And with a lot of young players, if things start to go bad, you can lose it pretty quickly. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see them run into a streak of 2 or 3 weeks like that White Sox had a month ago where they couldn't tie their shoes, basically. And you have to also remember that the White Sox are just finishing up right now their worst stretch of the year. They've had a tough schedule, but they're starting to play pretty well now.
They got a rough road trip the rest of this way, though. I mean, you'll know.
Yeah, this is it. But when this starting, I think it's June 1st, the Sox have something like 25 out of 33 games in Chicago. So, you know, at the end of that point, well, they just
started to play better.
They just had a 5-2 trip. They're 4-1 against the Indians, remember, this year. You know, the Indians are, this isn't the 27 Yankees we're talking about here. They're an up and coming team, but they've got this is only a quarter of the season. It's May. I think what you'd have to do is look at things when you really seriously look at things on what's going on here. Look at it July. If the Indians have a 12 game lead on July 4th, wow, then they look, maybe they're legit. Maybe they pick up a fourth starter. I mean, they should, if they're going to, they should probably be looking at that as soon as they can. Phil, am I missing somebody? But right now it looks to me like they have three starters and then zip.
Well, I mean, they have been deeper than you would think. I mean, they don't have, to me, Masterson is their key because I think he can be the ace. I think he can
he's
better than Carmona.
Right now, Carmona looks like the third starter.
Yeah, another key guy is a guy, Carrasco, that they got from the Phillies.
He's been horrible.
They got a pretty big blow there. You know, they really like this young pitcher from North Carolina, Alex White, who came up when Talbot went on the DL. And White just had a pretty severe, I think, elbow injury and probably going to knock him out for a couple months. They can't have many bad breaks like that. But
no.
Tom, the math I do all the time on a team that starts off slow is what does it take to get to 90 wins?
And the it's very possible nobody in this division gets to 90 wins. You know, that's a great math, but it really doesn't mean anything in this situation.
Well, how many does Cleveland have? They got 31 already? 30, 31?
They have 30 wins, and they've gotten a lot of them on the soft part of their schedule.
Well, so they
got to remember, like you said, people were looking at this as a 100-loss team coming into the year, and that's because they have to have everything go right to even stay where they are above 500. You know, I don't think they're going to be able to hold on this year. They're an up-and-coming team. Fine. But, Phil, you know, you can take that math. That math means nothing. Phil, you just wrote a book about Ernie Banks and the 69 Cubs. In 1969, the Cubs had a 10-game lead over the Mets in the middle of August. We're in May right now. And this is a team that was terrible last year that's off to a good start. Will they hold on? We don't know. But chances are they're not going to keep this pace up.
Do the White Sox have a Tom Seaver?
Yeah, right. Tom, yeah. The White Sox have the 69 Mets.
A big thing.
No, the White Sox have a deep rotation. They don't have Tom Seaver, but they've got more a deeper rotation and a deeper bullpen than Cleveland. And if one of the things, Phil, that you wrote about in your book was that the Cubs by the end of that season were burned out because they had no depth and their pitchers were gassed. If the Indians only have three starters and nobody really that good in their bullpen, they're going to be gassed. Sorry. You guys are putting an awful lot into 40 some games. In April and May.
I just don't see the Sox. I don't know when their bullpen got really good. I mean, when did that happen while I was in Ohio? I mean, you know.
The Sox bullpen has been since they killed them some games early on, but listen to some of the guys they have in their bullpen. Jesse Crane has a 2.35 ERA. They've got Santos has blown one save, but he's been, except for one game, he's been almost unhittable. And then Matt Thornton is starting to pitch a little better, but he was an all-star last year. I mean, they've got three or four good pitchers in their bullpen. And if Peavy is a key to the White Sox, like maybe Grady Sizemore might be to the Indians, where Sizemore is going to have to come back and Peavy's going to have to be back. But if Peavy comes back, you know, he pitched a shutout against the 27 Yankees or the Indians, whichever they apparently are. The White Sox have a real good lineup that wasn't hitting. They played terrible for 3 weeks, but they have a soft part of their schedule. And what you guys are missing, I'm not saying that the White Sox are going to make the playoffs. I'm saying it's absolutely ridiculous to act like they have no chance. That's the point, that it's May. That makes no sense. This isn't a team that lost 100 games the last 2 years. This has been a solid team for years with a good, solid lineup and pretty deep pitching that may have found a closer in Santos. How do you write them off so easily?
Tom, it's just so disappointing. And I haven't written them off, by the way, but it's so disappointing when you take a team that has the veterans, has the depth, has so much going for it that the White Sox should have had. They come out and open the season 10-19. That's what's hard to get away from. I mean, you look at the Red Sox did half of that. They started the year, I think, 2-10, and then they got it turned around quickly. You know, the White Sox seem to be starting to get it turned around, but, you know,
look how Tampa Bay started. Tampa Bay was terrible with their start. You know, if they had gone 10-19, let's say that you take that 10-19 and you put that into late July, early August, and they were already 15 or 20 games above 500 at that point. It's like, well, they had a slump, big deal. It was so early in the season. You know, people throw their hands up in the air and give up on a team. There's too many good players on this team. They're not perfect. They have a catcher that's probably the worst throwing catcher in baseball. He's a good catcher. He handles the pitchers well, but teams are always going to run on the White Sox. They're still pretty slow, but, I mean, it's a team that has a chance. Just don't write them off, I'm telling you. Look at what they've done since last week when you guys wrote them off. I mean, they've had a good week since then.
They were lucky to get the Dodgers. That was what happened. But they swept the Dodgers, right?
They won two against the Indians. They won two out of three against the Dodgers, and now they've split at Texas. That's a good week. I'll take that. I mean, they don't have to win seven in a row every week. They just have to play good baseball, which the last 3 weeks they're doing.
What they can't do, what they've put themselves in position, is they can't have another bad stretch. I think April, you know, it's exactly right. So far this year, they're following the formula from last year. You know, come out of the gate awful. Last year, they got incredibly hot the middle 2 months of the year. I mean, I've rarely seen a team hotter than they were, but you've got to sustain that from the rest of the season. You can't afford to have anything go wrong. So that's so much goes wrong in baseball. You know, I think Baseball Prospectus and their playoff odds I looked at it yesterday. They still give the White Sox a 20% chance or a 25%. I'd say it's, I think it was about a 20% chance to win the division, and they really only call Cleveland about a 30% chance. So
right.
They still think that somewhere in this three-team mix, Cleveland, White Sox, Tigers, you've got a lot of fluidity between those three teams.
The advantage for the White Sox this year compared to last year is this is the Indians they're nine games behind and not the Twins. If they were nine games behind the Twins and 12 games behind the Tigers right now, I'm thinking, okay, they're not going to catch both those teams. It would look much bleaker than it does right now. They're nine games behind an unproven team, and they're three games behind the Tigers. I'm honestly more worried about the Tigers, or at least as worried about the Tigers than the Indians. I just the Indians are getting there. I just don't think they're there yet. Now, if they pick up some big-time fourth pitcher, and if Chris Perez can keep closing and Sizemore comes back, that's a lot of ifs. But if all that happens, yeah, maybe they will. I just don't see it.
Now, I don't think there's going to be a lot of big trades, and I don't know that, Cleveland, for this fast start, they didn't draw many fans until I think about the time Dave arrived, that Red Series. Cash flow is always a big thing with their management. I don't expect they're going to have a lot of flexibility to go out and, make a big play to get help from outside. I think they're going to have to maybe develop guys within to provide the extra depth. So,
Probably good for them for their financial future that they did play so well when the fans did show up, which probably made them want to come back. That's probably very good for them.
I look at the attendance on Monday. I guess the weather was bad. There is still alluded to, but they had about 20,000 for Boston on that Monday night game. I don't know what they did last night, but yeah.
Did you guys see that Willie Mays debuted 60 years ago today? Isn't that crazy?
Boy.
60 years ago today, Willie Mays was 0-for-5 in his debut. If I remember right, Leo DeRocher used to talk about the fact that Mays got off to something like an 0-for-21 start, and DeRocher was just like, you know what, you're our guy, go out there and play. I don't care if you don't ever get a hit all year. And then Mays said he started hitting, and, the rest was history. So 60 years ago today for the Say Hey Kid.
Wow.
You guys have anything coming up? If we've only got a couple minutes left, a little over a minute, you have anything coming up you want to tell everybody about? Any big stories or anything going on at the Tribune and Sun-Times?
I got a book roundup with Phil's. I mentioned Phil's book coming up this Sunday. A bunch of good baseball books. So I look for that in the Sunday book section.
Oh, you're writing about Phil's Ernie Banks book?
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful.
I hope you don't rip it, Dave.
No, I gave it a good shout out.
Hey, Phil, real quick, where can people get your book? Real quick.
The easiest way is Amazon.com or AmazonKindle.com.
And that's the book about Ernie Banks. What's the title?
It's Ernie Banks, Mr. Cub, and the Summer of 69. Justin Towns Earl, free concert Monday night at Millennium Park. If you like good music, go.
All right, sounds good. It's time to finish things off. Great show today, guys. Everybody will be have a great week, and we'll be back next week from 8 to 9 a.m. Central Time. Thanks for listening.
If you're looking for world-class website hosting at a fair price, Pear Networks is your best choice. Whether you're a professional web designer or a beginner just getting your site online, Pear Networks has a web hosting plan that's right for you. Log on.